the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, you can certainly say 2020 has been an unusual year. First the pandemic, rioting and looting. Where do we go from here? But in particular, now that we're in summer, how is this impacting travel plans? Are you about to get on an airplane, take a cruise, get in the family car, and take a staycation? Let's find out what's going on in the industry. Joining me is Chip Rogers. He's president and CEO of Hotel and Lodging Association. Chip, you've got a report out here that talks about almost $17 billion in loss in state and local tax revenue from hotels in 2020 due to COVID. Is that up to date as of June? Because I know, for example, here in California, we just went back down on lockdown on restaurants and bars.
Yeah, those numbers are pretty accurate on what we estimate will be the occupancy rates and the what are known as the RevPAR, revenue per available room, for the industry for the entire year of 2020 and what kind of impact it will have on state and local governments. Typically, you know, we're running this time of year anywhere from 75 to 78% occupancy across the country because this is a high travel time. But instead, what we're seeing is occupancy at about 46%. So you can see a significant difference. And then along with that, of course, the rates are down considerably. So it's not just the economic activity that a hotel creates in and around itself, but it's also the tax revenue that is being driven to those state and local governments that will not be coming in.
You know, Chip, at a 46% occupancy, can a hotel remain solvent? Because I know here they've asked some of the restaurants at only 25%. And I just know, having worked in the restaurant business when I was working my way through college, you know, restaurants are heavily dependent on those Friday and Saturday nights, turning over the tables two or three times. The profits from alcohol, a lot of the restaurants that weren't able to open were doing takeout, but, you know, people weren't buying alcohol when they were taking out dinner. So at 46%, can you stay in business?
That's a great question. Some will, many won't. And the best way I can describe it is this. As we look across the entire landscape, you have what you would call perhaps interstate hotels with limited service, you know, no restaurants or anything like that. And then if you look at inner city urban centers, we have large convention center hotels, their needs are going to be dramatically different. So if you're in a limited service place where your real estate costs aren't necessarily that high, your labor costs aren't necessarily that high, you may be able to scrape by at 45, 46%. If you're in an urban center with high taxes, high cost of real estate, high labor cost, there's no way that you can make it. So generally, if you apply the entire industry to a certain break-even occupancy rate, it's usually about 55%. So we're still, you know, 9 or 10 points below what the entire industry needs to make a profit.
Have you guys taken a look and done projections in terms of how long do you think this will last? Like, let's say, Chip, in the first quarter of next year, they keep telling us that they're going to have a vaccine. I know Johnson & Johnson is working on one. Pfizer is working on one. Is it going to take something like that before people are going to feel safe enough to travel?
It's going to take that. It's going to take therapies. It's going to take just the human experience as well. You know, what's interesting about the most recent flare-ups is as we see the numbers increase in certain hotspots, the death tolls have been steadily declining, which is good. I mean, that's ultimately the most important statistic we can look at. So we're stuck in a place where people are scared and they don't know what to do next, and planning travel is usually not at the top of their list. But we believe hotels specifically are very safe places to be, that you can enjoy yourself, particularly in an outdoor setting. And that's what we're seeing right now, is that people are willing to get in their car and drive to a hotel if it's a resort, if it's a beach, if it's a mountain. It's something that is attached to doing the outdoor activities we love to do during summer.
You know, that's interesting because I saw a survey done out of Florida, and they said, if you're likely to take a vacation or travel, what were some of the hot spots you would go to? Number one was the beach. Number two was national parks. And the other thing I found interesting, Chip, number three was large cities.
Well, we're not seeing that yet. We would certainly love for that to happen in a very safe way, but we're certainly not seeing that yet. Now, there are some large cities New York that is doing okay. When I say okay, they're running occupancy a little over 40%. Keep in mind that New York typically this time of the year is running 90% occupancy. So they're more than 50% off where they normally are. And you can't make money in New York at 40 or 50, even 60% occupancy now.
Are you seeing something? You know, I have a client that is retired, and part of the way they make money and support their traveling, they have an RV. What they do is they Airbnb their home. And we were talking before we went on the air, they've had all their summer and their fall reservations canceled.
Yeah, we've clearly seen some of that. There's no question about it. Not just the cancellations, but the people delaying the decision to travel. Now, what we're seeing here during the summer is the normal pickup of people beginning to take their vacations, especially at a time where people have been cooped up in their house for months. What we're very fearful of, and I think this is where the light's either going to come on or it's going to stay dark, that is the month of October, because summer will come and summer will go. And after summer vacations are finished, do we have the business travel to support the industry? Because it's important for people to remember that about 65% of all industry revenue comes from some form of business travel. And so if business travel doesn't return this fall, we're going to be in a world of hurt.
Boy, I never thought about that. But, you know, a lot of businesses, the one thing about the quarantine is a lot of businesses are finding that, you know, they can go on Zoom and do teleconferences just as easily as they can putting somebody on a plane, flying them to a city in a hotel. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting one to see when that comes about in October. So normally summer travel and vacation, that stops in September. And then what is it, October to April or May? Is dependent on business conventions and travel?
Yeah, the fall is really a great time for business travel. You see it really start in September and last all the way until Thanksgiving. From Thanksgiving to about New Year, you have spotty business travel, but the real strength of business travel is in the early spring and in the fall time.
And what about, you know, during the winter months, if, you know, you live in New York, you live in Michigan or Connecticut, New Jersey, you got snow, a lot of people on the East Coast and some of the Midwest like to take vacations during the winter months, go down to Florida, the Keys, or the Bahamas.
Well, we're certainly hoping that that continues to happen. If you recall this year, because New York got hit so hard so early, there were a lot of people that, and Florida was one of those states, that didn't want people from New York traveling there. My hope is, I think everyone's hope is, we'll be well past that come this winter and that people can travel freely wherever they want to go. And if you want to take those winter vacations, there's a lot of great places to go across the U.S. You know, it's interesting, a moment ago you talked about perhaps a lessening of business travel because of people going on Zoom and other things to take care of their business. That is true. There's no question about it. I think there is one perhaps silver lining, though, and that is now that we as a society begin to embrace this work from anywhere, you know, you don't necessarily have to be at home working. You can be working from a hotel while your family is out enjoying the area around that hotel. So this weekend would be a perfect example. Let's say you left on a Thursday and you still needed to work remotely on Thursday and your family could enjoy wherever you went to, the beach, the mountains, whatever, and Thursday, and then you could enjoy on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so we're hoping the term bleisure, which is business and leisure travel combined, that bleisure really takes off because we think there's an opportunity there.
So Chip, tell me about, you mentioned that normally you need about 55% occupancy to break even. And right now you're about 46%. What do hotels, I mean, you have some hotels, they're public companies, they can raise money in the capital market. Are a lot of the other hotels, are they applying for PPP? Are they getting government grants, loans from the Fed? I mean, how are they going to stay afloat?
Yeah, so two things are happening here. First, PPP was very helpful, and there's no question about it. We are advocating for more, and we are certainly advocating for PPP directed at those businesses that have been hurt the most. There's a plan out there called the Restart Act that looks at businesses that have lost a certain amount of revenue compared to last year. We think that's really important. The second part of it is the traditional lending scene right now with your traditional bankers and borrowers. There's been a lot of flexibility, unlike 2008, 2009, when we had a financial crisis. This time around, the lenders have really provided quite a bit of forbearance. But as you know, that cannot last forever. And that's why, again, I mentioned October, because what we're looking at is the forbearance is usually for 90 days, and then we're hearing of some people getting a second round of forbearance. But we can't imagine it's going to extend much beyond September or October. So, you know, hotels are very heavy real estate-based businesses. You've got enormous mortgages to pay and property taxes. And so that forbearance right now is really keeping people afloat.
You know, it's interesting because let's say you have a business. I don't think anybody, if you go back to the beginning of the year, lowest unemployment in almost four decades, stock market at record levels, unemployment at record level lows, and then all of a sudden this hits. I mean, you know, I don't think any business could have foreseen the consequences of what we've gone through over the last 3 or 4 months.
To put it in perspective, on February 1st of this year, our industry across the United States had 900,000 job openings.
Mm.
By the end of April, over 70% of the people in our industry were not working. So that is the most shocking turnaround you could ever imagine.
900,000 job openings in February?
In February, and it dropped to, again, 70% unemployment in our industry. It's bounced back a little bit. We're still at about 50% unemployment in the industry, but still millions of jobs lost over just a 2 to 3 month period.
And what do hotels do? Are they relying on PPP? So let's say you're running a hotel, you've got people on the reservation desk, you've got a cleaning crew, you've got maintenance people, you've got people in the laundry department. All of that is a staff to run a large hotel. If you were to reopen, you've got to have access to these people that know the procedures, know the routines, know how the hotel functions. How do you keep those people around?
Well, one of the big challenges we're facing is exactly what you just articulated, and I'd add one more feature to it. The additional $600 federal unemployment benefit tacked on top of the state unemployment benefit has really equates to, on average across the country, about $25 per hour before taxes. That is an enormous disincentive for our industry, the restaurant industry, and others that offer these first-line opportunity jobs. You know, how do you start your career? Most people, or at least a good portion of people, start in some form of hospitality. Well, we're having a very difficult time when we have these reopenings, getting people to come back to work when they're making a lot more being unemployed. And that's unfortunate. And we certainly want people to be taken care of. I think it needs to be in line with what you were making, not receiving a bonus to not work. But it is a challenge right now.
You know, one of the interesting things, I saw your tax revenue losses in the report you put out. I was surprised at some of the big numbers for states that I would not have anticipated. Like, for example, Illinois, almost $700 million, half a billion dollars at Kentucky. And let me see, you had one here that was really up there, $940 million in Texas, over half a billion in Pennsylvania. Places you'd think that people would be going, Florida and places like that, you'd think there'd be a greater loss.
Yeah, well, a lot of it depends on what's the local tax rate. And so take Illinois, for example. I would gather that 80% of that is probably in the metro Chicago area. And their occupancy taxes, their sales taxes are enormously high. And so you're going to see a lot of lost revenue to the state and to the city in places like that. And then, of course, places like Texas, California, Florida, where you just have a large portion of our industry already located, you're going to have significant numbers there just because of volume.
Now, when you talk about 70% of unemployment in the industry, it's returned recently up to 50. Your report said this is probably the worst year on record. And you're projecting that it may be 2022 before things get back to normal. Let's talk about that for a minute. How do you stay alive to 2022?
Well, many won't. And so you're going to see a number of hotels sadly go out of business. Well, some already have, but more will go out of business because there's just no way to make it on occupancy levels. And you know, occupancy is what drives rate. And if your hotel rate goes down and your occupancy is down with it, you can't make it work. So, you know, theoretically, once we get back up to 60, 70% occupancy, rates should go up, but that's going to take quite some time. And as we're looking at it right now, it's really three phases. Phase number one is the leisure travel, which is back a little bit, but nowhere near what it was last year. Phase two is the business travel, which hasn't begun to percolate yet. And then phase three is the large meeting and convention travel that is completely non-existent right now. I saw a statistic a week ago that would just be shocking. Think about the city of Las Vegas. Think about all the meetings and events and conventions that happen in Las Vegas. There was a statistic from the noted experts in this field, Smith Travel Research, that showed 2 weeks ago there were literally zero conferences and conventions in Las Vegas, not a single one.
You know, that's amazing because I have a friend that just got back from Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and they said it was so strange walking down the strip and walking down the streets and not seeing anybody. Normally, when you go to Vegas, they have the streets are so crowded, and they're crowded at 1 or 2 in the morning, and they have these human escalators to get you from different casinos. And he said, you were just walking around. There was basically nobody.
Yeah, it's really sad.
So as you look at this, and as you point out, there's just many of these hotels that aren't going to be in business. It's the same thing is happening to gyms. It's happening to movie theaters. It's happening to restaurants. And, you know, the leisure, entertainment, hotel industry accounts for a significant portion of the service economy. So if a lot of these businesses don't come back, you're talking about displacing well over 10 million people. What do you do?
That's an important question that our policymakers are going to need to answer. And, you know, I think as we look at this, and all of us have pinned our hopes on both a vaccine and therapies to make sure that people are comfortable traveling and going back to venues, I just think it's going to be a long time before you see large concert venues filled to the brim again. You know, the NFL and major sports leagues are wrestling with this right now. What do you do with allowing people into stadiums, college sports, which thrive on this? And, you know, you think about college football, particularly in places like the South, where the money generated keeps so many other sports afloat. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day that was on a cross-country scholarship at a major college. I won't mention it. And they just eliminated their cross-country team because there's just no money. And so these things reverberate and impact all of us. So even if you don't think that you're touching or being touched by the hospitality, leisure, and travel sector of our economy, I can assure you, you are in some way.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, I'm a big football fan. And one of the things, part of the enjoyment of watching football, either if you're in the stadium, they're live, or watching it on TV, is seeing the reaction of the crowd, the cheering. And that also has an impact on players. You know, it would just seem strange. They were interviewing one of the key quarterbacks. And he was saying, he said, you know, part of what gets us going sometimes is when you have a home game and the fans are cheering you on when you're behind or when you're doing well, to sit there and play a game on a field with nobody watching seems to me would be extremely strange.
You know, it's interesting. If you've, all of us that are sports fans have been so desperate to watch sports, we'll watch pretty much anything. And recently I was watching a golf tournament a couple of weekends ago, and I love golf and I like watching golf. But it was so unique, even in a setting where the fans are typically quiet, it was so unique to watch them perform without fans around them. I can't imagine what it's going to be like in a sport like football, where the energy created by the fans is what helps the home team, and they thrive off of that. It's going to be a much, much different experience. But, you know, the NFL will probably survive because they can generate so much in television revenue. But I saw an interesting report. And I'll try to find it at some point. I'd ask your listeners to look it up. There was a great report showing the economic impact of the University of Alabama football on that given state, right? Because it's a small state with a small economy, but an enormous football program that has an incredible following. And it was a percentage of their state economy directly tied to Alabama football that you would never have dreamed of, right? But that's going to be impacted.
You know, it so much of our life is going to change. Like you said, you guys are looking at 20 to 22. One of our staff members went to a local mall, and it was like a ghost town. More than half the stores were closed down. And it's just strange when you walk into a store and they have footmarks where you can go. I mean, I just can't imagine the ladies walking into a Nordstrom on weekends and walking up to the cosmetics and getting their face done with face masks. It's just not going to work.
Now, you're right. So many of those things we take for granted that have changed, I don't want to say permanently, but changed at least until such time as there's the vaccine and people feel safe to go back to their normal lives.
Well, you know, you mentioned a key thing. Right now, you're at about 50% unemployment, which is just, you know, think about that. Anyone listening to this program, think of the industry that you're working in. Imagine if you were in tech or if you were in manufacturing or even in the medical field, what would happen if you had a 50% unemployment? I think a lot of us that aren't working in the hotel and leisure industry can't fathom what that really means when you have half of your entire workforce unemployed right now.
Yeah, it's a whole different world for sure, but it's directly related to, you know, a lack of business. Obviously, if we can't generate revenue, we can't pay employees, and there aren't as many rooms to clean, and there's certainly not restaurants and bars that are operating at full capacity, and pool areas that need to be repaired and cleaned, and And so just the demand has dwindled so much, there's not the need for it. And we certainly hope to get back to it. But as you indicated a moment ago, and we talked about, you know, this is a multi-year problem for us. We were the first hit, us along with airlines and cruise ships, and we'll be among the last to come out of it along with the restaurants.
You know, I think the real key, and I don't know this is going to be for our policymakers, but let's face it, as you mentioned, a lot of your industry just isn't going to make it. And the longer this goes on, they're going to be out. And finding out what you're going to do with these displaced workers, how you're going to move them into a profession. I mean, there's people that have been professional bartenders their life. They've been professional waiters or waitresses. They've worked in the hotel industry, and that's what they've done their entire life as a career. And all of a sudden now, you've taken that career away from them. What do you do? And I don't think these are the kind of people that want to sit there and just get an unemployment check the rest of their life.
No, the silver lining in it is that there was a wonderful study done a couple of years ago. It talked about the number of people working in the American economy that at some point had worked in the hospitality field, and it was upwards of 40%. And so the good news is that many of the tools and traits that you learn in working in the hospitality field do translate quite easily to other businesses because, you know, being able to speak to other people and make them feel good about what they're doing or where they're staying, that's a skill, and that is something that translates to almost any business. So it's great, but you know, these are a lot of people who loved their life in hospitality. They don't necessarily want to go to another industry, but unfortunately, economic circumstances are going to dictate that.
So let's talk about where you are today. As you mentioned, you're about 50% unemployment. You're maybe somewhere around 46% capacity. Let's talk about the opportunities for our listeners if they are thinking of making a vacation. Let's talk about some of the deals and savings they can that are available.
Well, look, anywhere you go right now, you're going to find a rate much lower than you would find at this time of year in that same location. Keep in mind, of course, if you want to go to the number one beach resort in America, and I'm not even sure which one that is, but let's assume that you know what it is. It's still going to cost you a little bit of money to do something like that. But a typical hotel right now is going to be priced significantly less than it was at this time last year. And then as we move past the leisure summertime activities, you know, into Thanksgiving and holiday travel, you're going to find some really amazing deals. You're seeing that with airlines as well. So if you feel confident about getting in an airplane and going to a hotel, you know, you can probably have a vacation right now at about half price from what you saw last year.
Wow. And is there anything that, let's say, hotel industries are doing working with places like Disneyland, SeaWorld, Universal Studios to combine something to make it very attractive? Because it's not just the hotels, it's also some of these theme parks as well.
It is. It's difficult because there are so many layers of state and local government restrictions on so many different types of businesses. And it varies from city to city and state to state. So in one place, well, I'll give you a perfect example. In the state of California, staying in a hotel right now in pretty much anywhere outside of San Francisco is fine if you're there for leisure travel. San Francisco, meanwhile, is still prohibiting leisure travel in their hotels. Hmm. There's no scientific basis for that. They're just doing it. So what we see is that all across the country with all these different levels and layers of government, it's really difficult to be able to coordinate that way. Now, one thing that we are doing is working very closely with the airline industry, the taxi cab industry, the Ubers and Lyfts of the world to create seamless policies for cleanliness and safety, because that is what the American people want right now. If they felt safe, if they knew their environment was going to be clean, they would be traveling at much higher rates. So we are very supportive of everything that the airline industry is doing to convey that message. And they're very supportive of everything we're doing to convey that message.
So, Chip, what would you, if you were, let's say, planning to take a vacation with you and your family, what would be some of the safety things you would be looking for if you were going to book a hotel? What would you want to see or be reassured if you were to arrive there?
Well, because I'm in the industry and we created the national guidelines on this called the Safe Stay Guidelines, I'm very familiar with what is happening at the property level. So I start from perhaps a little bit different place with knowledge of what's going on. So I really have no fear of going to a hotel. In fact, I would argue that virtually every hotel is cleaner than my house. And I think my house is pretty clean. So I don't have any problem with that. But I think as a general consumer, what you really should be looking for, or what you will notice, I guess, is the best way to put it, is a lot more cleaning of the public spaces, A lot more signage, making sure that you're staying 6 feet apart. A lot more opportunities to do things in a contactless way. I mean, we're urging everybody to download their favorite hotel app and make sure that you're checking in using your app so you don't have to go to the front lobby. You're going to see differences in the pool setting, clearly in workout rooms if they're open, in any bar or restaurant attached to the hotel. It's going to look a lot different. Your breakfast buffets will be gone and they'll be replaced by the grab-and-go items. Your room service won't happen in the room. The food will be left outside the room for you to take. So there'll be a lot of efforts that make the experience a little bit different, but it'll still be a great experience. So, you know, I encourage people to travel. We have, you know, knock on wood, no reports across the country anywhere if there being any outbreaks associated with a single hotel anywhere in the country. And the cleaning standards that go into it are as good as they get. In fact, our cleaning standards for the hotel industry have been reviewed by the CDC. We're the only industry that I'm aware of that has gone through that process.
So is there any place, Chip, that you could go to, let's say our listeners could go to, that you guys have put out? Here are some kind of things that you would want to look for in terms of safety or anything that, let's say, a potential vacationer would find valuable?
Yeah, so if you go to our website, AHLA.com, which stands for American Hotel and Lodging Association, but AHLA.com, there is an entire section there on safe stay guidelines. And it walks you through not only what the guidelines are, but also an independent property checklist. So we make the checklist available for every hotel in the country so they can literally go by and check off each box. Now, keep in mind, all hotels are different. So if you're staying at a Motel 6 this week, on a stopover along the interstate somewhere, that's going to, their checklist is going to be dramatically different than if you're staying at the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, Florida, just because the properties are significantly different. But we do have that available so consumers can look at it just as well as hoteliers and see exactly what the industry is doing.
All right. Well, as we close, Chip, appreciate you coming on the program. Give out that website one more time.
It's AHLA.com. That stands for American Hotel and Lodging Association.
All right. Well, listen, Chip, thanks so much for joining us and keeping us up to date. All the best to you and your industry and wish you much success and safety in the years ahead.
Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.